Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we take a look at your lawn, your turf, with Doug Soldat. Doug is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass, urban soils. He looks at nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, landscape irrigation. So he can talk about a lot of things. And maybe you're new to caring for a lawn. What questions do you have? Maybe you've been doing it a long time and see some trouble spots. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. We would love to hear from you. And Doug Soldat, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
So how has the stay-at-home order affected your work with UW?
It's interesting. I recently got approval to work on my research plots at the OJ Knorr, you know, after putting in place the proper safety protocols, the social distancing, and things like that. So I'm actually at the OJ Knorr turf facility right now, just taking a break in between collecting data by myself. the grass is starting to green up out here, and we're going ahead pretty much as normal, as safe as we can.
You know, I was thinking, are the lawn services, do you know if the lawn services are allowed to work?
I believe they are. I'm not 100% sure on how everything reads, but I see the lawn care companies out there. I see signs that they have been out, and I believe that landscape maintenance was considered an essential activity. I know for sure golf courses have been able to maintain their properties and things like that.
Yeah, so I think everything seems to be okay in that area. What are some basic things we can do to improve our lawns?
Yeah, so with the stay at home, I saved some time with the commute and stuff, and I did more lawnmower maintenance than I usually get a chance to do. And so that's what I would recommend everybody. You know, grass really isn't growing yet in Wisconsin, but sharpen your mower blade, change your oil, change the air filter, get that lawnmower running well, and that does a lot to just improve your lawn.
Absolutely. Well, we have a number of callers online, so let's take some calls. Elaine in Ingleside, Illinois, has something for you. Let's go there. Hi, Elaine.
Hello. My problem is a little bit above the grass. I have a birch tree that was leaning over the house, and we had one of the trunks cut. Now that it looks like it's bleeding, it's got pink coming out of the cut, which is about 10 inches in diameter, and it's dripping down the side of the tree. Is there something I can do about that?
It sounds like sap to me, doesn't it, to you?
Yeah, that's what I would guess too. That's the sugars that the plant's transporting that are kind of leaking out of that wound. It should heal up. That's not something I wouldn't expect to continue.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend. We used to recommend putting something on those areas, and they don't recommend that anymore because it could create more problems than it solves. So, Elaine, you might just—I wouldn't worry. Well, it's—I think it's a natural process that's involved here. And this time of the year is when the sap's coming up anyway, or has come up. And so you're going to get some sap, and I don't think it's anything you need to worry about. So there you go. Yeah, Elaine, is that? Yes, go ahead.
Just want to be sure I wasn't doing something wrong.
I think you're fine. But I definitely would not put any kind of tar-like wound covering over it, because that'll just create more problems.
Thank you very much. We enjoy your program.
Thank you. Well, Alice in Gays Mills up next. Alice, hello.
Hello, how are you? And thank you for being there to answer questions. Our lawn, if you can call it that, because it's never been really professionally done, never seeded with wonderful grass seed. never sodded, nothing like that. We live in a rural area, but we have lots of grass around the house to mow, and I simply stick out weeds as I'm able because I don't want to put herbicides or pesticides or anything like that on my grass. We have grandchildren who roll around in it, and I don't want that. At any rate, that's how we take care of it, and we mow it consistently, and we probably mow it a little too short sometimes. But the question I have for today is about moles and voles, I think. We've always had some problems with moles, I assume moles, and we have trapped a few with the mole traps, but that's really hit and miss, and it's very hard to get them. And after this winter is over now, I see an incredible amount of more mole runs and bare patches where the grass had been torn up, and perhaps that was voles even, not the little mounds where the moles come up for air, you know, and leave a mound of dirt. So a variety of stuff, but everywhere. Oh, my goodness. And so I'm wondering, do we need to just keep stomping them down with our feet? That doesn't seem to solve the problem. They just come up again. Do we need to get a big roller and flatten it out? I drive over the lawn when I'm taking a shortcut to leave, but we're not even doing that very much. Is there some recommended or better way to try and stop these critters? I mean, I guess I was told at one point or read that they're after all the larvae in the ground, and if your yard is healthier and you don't have all those larvae in there for them to eat, they won't be around. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think what you're describing is actually the voles, the meadow mice that form their surface tunnels. They don't go down into the ground, but they when the snow cover hits, they chew these little tunnels all across the lawn, and that's how they kind of scurry safely from the predators. They reproduce like crazy, like, you know, multiple generations per year. And they don't, the good news is they don't really cause lasting damage to the lawn. I have them in my lawn too right now. And you can see them because the grass isn't growing enough to recover those tunnels that those voles have chewed. So my approach to them, partly because there's not much you can do about it, is just to let it grow through. There are some things you can do to reduce the populations of voles in your yard, and those things are tough too. It's like move brush piles, you know, because they like to live around you know, sticks and brush piles. So, you know, if you can eliminate those habitat areas, you might be able to reduce it. But in terms of they're not feeding on the grubs, the moles feed on grubs. But I think what you're describing is a vole problem, and controlling the grubs won't address that. So my best advice is just rake it up, put down an application of fertilizer in late May. That's going to grow the grass thicker and cover those up. But it's really kind of a temporary aesthetic issue, nothing to worry about long term.
There you go. Thank you, Alice, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, there is a temptation to put fertilizer down earlier, Doug, and that's not necessarily a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. We don't like to recommend applying fertilizer right now. So right now, the if you have crabgrass, this is a good time to think about controlling crabgrass with a pre-emergent herbicide. There are sort of alternative non-chemical ways to do that as well with corn gluten meal. So a traditional crabgrass pre-emergent herbicide, the timing is right now, as is the corn gluten meal, which has a chemical in it that naturally prevents seed from germinating. So that's the only thing you should be thinking about now in terms of applications. We're still probably a month away from your first fertilizer application.
So those weed and feed kinds of things shouldn't probably be done at this time.
Yeah, we don't love them. Lawn care companies are some are going out with weed and feed. Some of them just do the pre-emergent application. You know, those combination products are convenient, but the timings for those two, the weed and the feed, are actually separated a bit. So ideally, just do the pre-emergent now, and then wait till about Memorial Day to fertilize your lawn.
Let's take another call. Andy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
I need some help or guidance in reseeding a backyard that has two large maple trees, two sugar maples. Underneath the trees is just dead dirt. There's barely any grass underneath there. But I would like there to be grass there, but I don't. I've never been a lawn guy, so I never really know what to do.
All right, so the tree people are going to freak out, but this is a joke. But, you know, the first step would be to cut down those maple trees. But, you know, maple shade is really, really difficult. It's such a dense shade, and grasses that didn't evolve to live in shady areas. So the reason it's dirt there is there's just not enough light to keep a lawn alive. I would, if you want to try it, your best bet is to find a chewings, fine fescue, or red fescues. These fescue grasses are the most shade tolerant, and they might be able to survive for a couple years. But in the end, you're going to be back down to dirt with maple shade. Look for ground covers that are shade tolerant. Think about mulching, but you know, in terms of having a lawn under a maple tree, you're not going to make that happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate but true. Those maple trees are really beautiful, but they create problems.
You can prune them up. You know, the goal is to get 4 hours of direct sunlight. And if you do, if you're during the growing season, if you notice you got 4 hours of direct sunlight, then you can go ahead and shoot for a shade tolerant grass. But if you don't have that, it's just going to be fighting a losing battle.
Andy, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Cheryl had emailed to say she recently read that clover is a good grass replacement. Talking about grass and so forth. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I love clover. We do at the OJ North Center here. I have a couple different trials with clover mixed in purposely, and we're looking at different types of clover and different seeding rates and things like that. Yeah, it's absolutely a good, instead of a replacement, I think of it as a companion. It's a really good companion to Kentucky bluegrass. So Kentucky bluegrass needs usually supplemental nitrogen to keep the density up that keeps the dandelions out, and clover provides that. So if you want to have a Kentucky bluegrass clover lawn, you may not need to fertilize it. And I think, you know, in the old day, if you look back before, you know, pre-World War II, Scotts was selling grass seed that was Kentucky bluegrass and clover. So obviously we knew that worked back then. And then came the advent of inexpensive fertilizers and herbicides, and we said, well, we can just have Kentucky bluegrass. But, you know, the pendulum's swinging back, and people are starting to realize the value. Drawbacks of clover are that it doesn't do well with heavy traffic or shade. But in that mix with Kentucky bluegrass, we found it produces a very nice lawn. Keeps the dandelions out, looks good.
I like the look of it.
Yeah.
I think it looks great.
Right.
So there you go, Cheryl. Thanks for that question. Appreciate it very much. Doug Soldat, our guest today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, talking with him about your lawn. Join in, 800-642-1234. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Bill Martin's our on-air producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You know, it really is true. Now more than ever, you can count on WPR to always be here for you as your source for information and inspiration, we hope. We're in our spring membership drive right now, and that means your support of the programs you value is so important today. So hope you'll make a gift today. Just go to 888-202-2552, or it may be easier just to go online to WPR.org, and thank you. Talking with Doug Soldat today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison in turfgrass, urban soils, nutrient management, and a lot of other things. Are you new to caring for a lawn? What questions do you have? Love to hear from you. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone 1-800-642-1234. And Doug, we'll take another call. John in Mount Horeb will go to you next. Hi, John.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about the ideal time to plant lawn seed or to scatter lawn seed in the spring. I need to do some repair work in my yard, and I'm just looking for the ideal time to spread that seed.
Doug, what do you think? Oh, did we lose Doug? Oh, my good.
Can you hear me, Larry?
Yeah, can hear you now.
Yeah, okay, sorry about that. Spring is not the ideal time to seed, unfortunately, but it's the time where people do it. So the best time to do repair work is from August 15th to the end of September. But that said, a lot of people are going to do it anyway in the spring. The key is to prepare the soil, so the damaged areas. You want to loosen the existing soil, bring in some new topsoil if needed or some compost, and just provide a nice seed bed for that grass seed to go in. Put the grass seed down, rake it into that prepared seed bed, and then step on it to get good seed-to-soil contact. And then you want to throw down a mulch of some type. And there's all kinds of different mulches, and the research says they work all about the same. And that'll protect the seed and the soil from the raindrops. The problem with a spring seeding is that you do get weed competition at that time. So most of the weeds that exist in lawns germinate in the spring as well. So you're likely to have more weeds in those new areas than if you did it in the fall. If it's a small enough area, maybe you can pick them. There's not a lot of good herbicides that you use to control those weeds in the spring. But the key is good seed to soil contact, tamp it down, put a mulch over, and then the rains should help that grass come in.
You know, I was about to suggest that if it was a big enough area, you could put some sod in there and just get it over with. But now I'm not so sure we can lay our hands on sod.
No, I think sod is delivering. I just met with one of our local growers the other day, and they're doing drop-offs, and you can order sod there. And I believe at the garden centers, I have seen sod available too. So sod is
good.
An awesome option. Yeah, I really like sod.
I do too.
It's easy. It's easy. Yeah,
and it's not all that expensive. To be
That's
perfectly
right.
honest.
Yeah.
Oh. John, there you go. Thank you so much. Dave in Orfordville, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I have a question. My dog has managed to kill numerous spots in the lawn like he does every year over the winter. And I just some advice as to how maybe to repair those spots. Someone had given me an idea one time. They said they used at golf courses where they would take like potting soil or a soil mixture, mix grass seed in, water it down in a plastic bag, let it sit for a couple of days and give it a jump start and then put it on these spots. I don't know if something like that would work or if you have some other ideas.
Yeah, you know what? I have the same problem, and that's basically what I do. So rake up the dead area, loosen up the soil that's underneath it, and then I have like a wheelbarrow or a 5-gallon bucket with the soil and the seed mixed into it, just like you're describing. You can what you talked about is pre-germinating it, where you put it in the bag and actually the seed starts to pop. That might be a little overkill. You can just mix it up together at the time of laying it down, but a little bit of soil, put the seed in there, stamp it down just like we talked about from the last caller, and those areas should start to pop up.
All right. There you go, Dave. Easy peasy. Thank you. Megan in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Megan.
Hi. I have a backyard that is all creeping Charlie, and I didn't mind it for a while. It smells nice, but I realized that my creeping Charlie is going into my neighbor's yard, and they probably all are getting upset about that. I don't want to use chemicals to get rid of it, so I was wondering what you suggested.
Yeah, is it a shady backyard?
Partially.
Yeah?
Partially shady.
Partially, yeah, yeah. So we were talking about the maple tree earlier, creeping Charlie or ground ivy is one of these plants that is adapted to that shade and definitely outcompetes the grass in that condition. So it's going to be something that's going to be difficult always. You can pull it up. It pulls up relatively easily because they're connected by stolons, but then the plants just kind of regenerate. So it's something that if you're going to use a non-chemical control method, really physical removal is your best option. And that's not going to solve it for you. The best timings, or if you go with a chemical control, which you already said you're not interested in, there is a product that is better at controlling it called triclopyr. That's one of the active ingredients in the herbicide. And the optimum timing for that is when the Creeping Charlie is flowering in the spring and then also around Halloween or our last frost in Wisconsin. But in terms of other non-chemical control options, aside from pulling, I'm just not aware of them. It's just the plant loves that shady environment, and it starts to take over.
I've gone in and in the lawn. I've said this in the past on the show with my daughter, Emily, and we've sat and pulled it. And it's amazing how much you can pull in a half hour.
Yeah. It is an option. And people, I think we've gotten away from pulling weeds. We've heard a couple callers say that, yeah, I've done that before. Yeah, just do it. It's a nice meditative practice. You go out there, you walk around for a half hour, 45 minutes, just kind of picking away and enjoying the outdoors, and you can do some damage. Some good damage on the weeds.
Megan, there you go. Thank you so much. Let's go to Zach in Appleton next. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Larry, I have a small yard, and I'm kind of looking to, I guess, ideally, I'd like to not mow. So I've got some grass down right now, but I'm looking to seed it with some, Creeping Charlie or something that's, you know, good on high traffic, gets a lot of sunlight. But ideally, I'd like to not mow my lawn and just kind of seed it with something that looks good. So that's my question, I guess.
Yeah, so you said it does get traffic?
Yeah, so ideally I'd like to use it, you know, to walk around, and the rest of the place is pretty well landscaped, so I guess I'd like to just walk around and not have to, you know, walk barefoot and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so that is a tough one, because one of the reasons that grass is such a sustainable lawn cover is because it repairs itself from the damage. So you're probably not going to ever be able to say, I don't mow it at all, but I think if you go with a fine fescue mix, you can mow it twice a year. You know, mow it midsummer and then again in the fall, and that'll look okay. But there again, you will have some growth. Fine fescue is the sometimes they sell these as low mow or no mow mixtures, but they typically are high in percentage of fine fescue, and that grass will kind of, it's a very slow growing grass, and it just kind of leans over when it gets tall. And so I would check into that. That would be my recommendation. If you're not going to walk on it at all, there's lots of ground covers that you could choose. But when you start putting traffic on it, a lot of those will fade away. So I would like a fine fescue, low mow, no mow mix for that. And like I said, they call them no mow. You're still looking at probably mowing it once or twice a year. And if you have a weed whacker, it's a small area, you could mow it that way. It doesn't have to be with a traditional mower.
Mm-hmm. That does
all right,
that.
Wonderful.
All right. Thank you, Zach. Appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Shake in Madison next. Hi, Shake.
Morning. I'm back with my frost depth questions because I remember once I learned that soil is actually a living organism. And what does the shallower frost end up doing to our soil in the long term?
Yeah, so soil is absolutely a living organism. It's, in a handful of soil, there are millions of different microorganism species, which is just mind-blowing to me. Part of our research is to figure out how those soil organisms affect the grass growth and the quality of the soil. But with so many different species, it's a really difficult task to figure that out. The frost, they're adapted to the frost. These microorganisms kind of shut down and hibernate. So one of the reasons that we say, you know, don't, you know, don't manage your soil in these cold periods is because there's not a lot of action going on. You put down a slow-release fertilizer, a lot of those need microbes to break those fertilizers down, and the microbes are just inactive. So they're not dead, and even when we try to sterilize soils, we find that they either bounce back quickly or we're never even able to kill all the microorganisms. So they're resilient. I wouldn't worry about the frost affecting them. I think they're well adapted to that condition. Once the soils warm up, the activity resumes.
There you go, Shake. Thank you so much. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your question about lawns. Rich in Two Rivers, it's your turn.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yeah, the fishing invitation on Lake Michigan is still open. But this is the situation. I got to close the door of the van. I'm working on it. And this is the situation. People aren't thinking outside the box. What happened with voles and moles and mice, you get tired of hearing that about it. I took care of it. I went to pick up a tractor from a farmer over by Kewaunee, and he turned some of his farmland into wetland, and he got subsidized for making a snake pit. And I asked him how many snakes he's got. He says, "Oh man, we got a million." I said, "Can I grab a couple big black ones?" And I did. And then I set up a habitat underneath the shed near the house. And I haven't seen a bull or a mole for a mile since. And they're friends now. I mean, they come out, they sun, and they go back in.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, Rich. Now, I'm not sure that you're going to get a whole lot of people saying, "Well, let's go get Rich's idea and get some snakes."
Everybody's got their own, you know, their own tolerances, and I like that one. You got to figure out what works for you. Snakes work for you. That's awesome. I love it.
I do too. Rich, you're a good guy. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, man. Jan in Viroqua, it's your turn. Hi, Jan.
I like the snakes too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have two questions. One is about, well, I didn't mow my grass before it frosted and overwintered. Now I've got a lot of grass that's maybe 6 inches tall from last year that's out there, and the new grass is coming up through it. What is the best thing to do with that? And then my second question is about how do I start clover? I would like to have clover in among my grass, and then I would also like to get rid of the grass on a couple of walkways and seed that with clover.
Yeah, good. Let's see. First question, I already lost.
Dead grass.
The dead grass. Yeah.
On the new grass.
Yep, thanks, Larry. You can mow that now, and if you do mow it now, it'll just speed up the greening of the grass that's poking through, or you could just leave it. But, you know, basically what we see is people that mow their lawns really short in the fall and get rid of all that material, their grass will green up a week or two quicker than the people that leave it long. There's really no harm in doing it either way. I actually prefer to have that stuff there because that's preventing the weeds from germinating and coming up. But, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Just run the mower over it just like you would any time, and that'll clean it up. Clover, we are currently studying the best ways to incorporate clover into existing lawns. We don't have the results of, you know, studies ongoing yet, but get yourself some white clover seed. And there are different varieties of white clover. You're looking for a dwarf white clover. And the key with getting that to establish is to have some areas of bare soil. So if you have, you can rent these lawn dethatcher rakes that have these vertical blades that might create some slits in the soil, and that's one of the ways we've done it in our research. So you run that over your lawn, it does expose some bare soil, and you just sprinkle the clover on, and then hope for some of that to come up. The clover in the walkway, I would be concerned that clover doesn't really do really super well with traffic. So it kind of depends on the amount of traffic you're going to get. But again, just kill that area. There's a number of ways to do that. Till up the soil, loosen the soil, put the clover seed down, pack it down with your feet, put some mulch over it, and you'll have a nice stand of clover in a few weeks.
Yeah. Jan, does that help?
It does. When you said use the dethatching tool and we need some dirt, bare dirt, do I need a completely bare spot? I have one of those that I need to reseed, but
no,
in the stand of grass.
Yeah, the dethatcher rake will just create little channels that are like a quarter of an inch wide or less. You won't even notice. When you go over your lawn with a dethatcher rake, it's going to create these little tiny slits in your lawn that the seed is going to fall into, but it doesn't kill your lawn. It doesn't ruin your lawn at all. It just creates a little bit of little lines of bare soil that you can sneak your seed into. You won't really notice it.
Yeah. And the other area where you had, I think Jan says she had a larger bare area. Is that right? I think that's what she said. And then it's just the normal things that you were talking about. If you've got one of those areas, working the soil up a little bit and
exactly.
Putting your seed down and there you go. Tap it down.
Yep.
Let's take another call. Melissa in Eau Claire, it's your turn.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show, Larry. I listen every day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just wanted to expand just a little bit on the dog situation.
Yeah.
We're new to this. We have a 100-pound puppy that has created some really high traffic areas. And I didn't catch if you said like a certain type of seed to put down for high traffic for a bigger dog.
Yeah,
is that something we should think about?
Yeah, it is. The dead spots that we talked about, the dog's urine killing the spots, I recommend perennial ryegrass for those spots. It'll germinate quickly. It grows rapidly to fill in those spots fast. But for high traffic areas, probably the best grass to have is a Kentucky bluegrass, because Kentucky bluegrass can grow back from damage better than other grasses. Now, what you want to do in those areas is put down more fertilizer. So when you look at an athletic field, when we look at our nitrogen recommendations, they're more than they are for a lawn, because those athletic fields get torn up and used. So anytime you have an area that's suffering because of too much traffic, too much damage, one of the solutions is more fertilizer. And when I say more, I mean just, you know, if you fertilize your lawn once or twice, add another application. So, you know, not doubling it, not necessarily putting down twice as much at one time, but just adding another fertilization event to whatever you would normally do.
All right.
And what time of year do I do that then? When should I start that?
Yeah, the best, if you're going to fertilize one time, it's Labor Day. If you're going to fertilize twice, it's Memorial Day and Labor Day. And if you're going to add three times, it's Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day. That's kind of the easiest way to remember that. The holiday timings.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Tim and Marinette. Hi, Tim. Tim, are you there?
Hi. Hey, I have some fertilizer I purchased last fall. It's a Turf Builder Winter Guard Fall Weed and Feed. And the stuff is so expensive. I was wondering if I could just use it this spring.
Yeah, the winterizer fertilizer with a weed and feed is probably very similar to the spring version with the weed and feed. You know, again, I don't love weed and feed products because the granular herbicides don't work as well as a liquid one, and then also the timing is a little off. But for a broadleaf weed and feed fertilizer, your optimum timing is going to be mid-May when the dandelions are in full bloom, and that's maybe just a couple weeks earlier than we'd recommend for a fertilizer application. So, yeah, use that weed and feed in mid-May.
All right.
Best results.
There you go, Tim. Thank you very much for calling. And Jan in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Jan.
Yes, hello. Oh, I have a lot of the blue little flowers called squill all over the lawn, and I'm wondering how to get rid of them or else prevent them from coming up. They have little bulbs. They're very invasive, according to the DNR, too.
Sorry, Jan, I missed the type of weed.
Squill?
Squill.
Say it once more.
They're called squill, I believe. There's a
squill?
Little blue flowers that come all over your lawn, and they got a little bulb at the end of them.
Huh.
What do I do about them?
Oh, boy.
A little bulb.
Yeah. I'm on the Wisconsin horticulture page here, Siberian squill. This one is new. I haven't come across this one. It says it's a member of the lily family, and it's one of the first things to show in the spring. Geez, I don't know the answer to that. Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say, probably those areas, Jan, you just mow them like you normally would. And I don't know. We'll have to look into this a little more as to whether or not they're really invasive. But I would guess that those flowers are going to be done in a week. And then you're just going to be mowing the lawn like you always do.
Yeah, and especially with bulbs, they tend to be very difficult to control with traditional methods just because that bulb stores so much. So I agree with Larry. It might be something that you just learn to love, a little bit of color there in the early spring, and then they'll fade out as the summer progresses.
It's also one of those things that some beneficial insects can make good use of the flowers. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely a positive to having diverse amount of plants in that lawn. So figure out what you can tolerate and manage the rest.
There you go, Jan. Thank you for calling. Well, Doug Soldat, our guest today. He is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW Management, PhD in horticulture. It's always great to have him come by to talk about your lawn and mine. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network.
I'm Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on WPR for trustworthy news and conversations that help you understand our world. And that's especially true during the coronavirus pandemic. WPR and NPR are providing comprehensive coverage from both near and far. At times, it's fascinating or heartbreaking. And sometimes, it helps us find cause for optimism. We will get through this together. Sustaining journalism like this requires you to play a vital role. To ensure the resources are in place, we have an array of fundraising activities throughout the year. They have all been affected by the crisis. So your support of responsible journalism is more important than ever. If you can, make a gift now at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Thank you.
Taking a look at your lawn today here on Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, and great to talk with him and certainly great to hear from you. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. And lots of callers online, so I think we'll just go back to the phones, Doug, and take a call from Lynn in Evansville. Lynn, hello.
Hello, and good morning, and thank you for having this show. It's so timely for me. I had last fall had my front lawn replaced with sod. And since it's quite an investment, I was worried this spring about how I should properly care for it. And I was thinking of basically getting a company, a lawn care company in. And I was wondering, are they all the same or are there professional organizations that basically I should check to see that they have membership in some kind of soil science in? So I'm looking for what would be prudent in that regard in terms of lawn care services that might have to meet some specific qualifications to be the best.
Yeah. Doug?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The state will license all of those companies, so that's one level of assurance that they're following the state's regulations, and the pesticide applicators have to take a test every 5 years that demonstrates that they know the rules and the regulations. Aside from that, though, the next level would be how active is that particular company in the professional societies. And there's national societies. There is a state Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association here, and there's a Wisconsin Turfgrass Association as well. So there's definitely different organizations. I think a good place to start would just be asking that question to the company, and knowing now that absolutely there are other optional associations regarding professional development and outreach. And so I will speak, and others here at Wisconsin will speak to these groups and talk about our latest research and the best practices, and of course the groups that are there and using their recommendations are the ones you want to find. So just do a little background and ask them those questions. What associations they're active in, and I think the answers should help guide you in which company you should select.
Yeah, Lynn, does that help?
It does indeed. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Tom in Heartland will go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hello, good morning. Hey, on the turn of the century, our subdivision was left alone. Everything else was turned into farmland because we had the oak stand there and all the soil was mainly clay. And now our house, two-story house, on the north side of it, we have a lot of moss. And there's other patches of moss that are in the sunlight. But we've tried copper sulfate, crystals, making a super saturated solution of that, put it on the moss, and that didn't get rid of it. It seems
You're kind of breaking up, Tom, but he's got a shady yard with a lot of clay, but on the north side of the house where he's got all that shade, he's getting moss. So can he get rid of it so he can seed? That's a problem.
Moss is an indicator of an unideal growing environment. And it's, you think it's shade, but it's not always. Moss can survive in full sun as well. And so it sounds like in this case, though, the shade is what's going to limit the grass growth. For getting rid of moss, the copper sulfate is an option. Iron sulfate is an option.
He tried those.
he did. The other one I would recommend is an herbicide called Quicksilver. It's actually a relatively low toxicity herbicide. It's an EPA reduced risk product. So it's called Quicksilver. It's labeled for moss control, and it is very effective. So I'd look into that. And then to prevent the moss from coming back, I mean, you may have too much shade and it might just come back because the grass can't grow. But select a grass that's adapted to that shade. If it's a dry shade, you want a fine fescue grass, which could be a chewing's fescue, a hard fescue, a red fescue. Those are all types of fine fescue. But if it's a wet shade, you want to look for a special grass called Poa sapina or sapina bluegrass. And the problem with that is it's quite expensive, but it's really the only thing that's going to grow in a wet, shady environment.
Yeah, that Poa sapina, it's expensive, but it's not expensive if you put it in and it works. And there you've got it for years and years down the road. That's kind of the way to look at it.
That's
as
exactly
far as
right.
I'm concerned.
Yeah, and when I say it's expensive, I mean you're talking $30 to $50 a pound. So it's like 10 times more expensive than grass seed. But one way I would recommend is mix it in. So buy, don't purchase it to cover the entire area, but just purchase it and mix it in. And over time, because it is a good spreading grass in wet, shady environments, it'll take over eventually.
All right. So there you go, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. I'm sorry we had the phone issues there. Nancy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good morning. I look out the window across the street from my house, and for several years now, my neighbor has had a lawn service come in and take care of her lawn. Well, for as many years as they've been coming in now, right now over probably 50% of the lawn is yellow, and it is like that all the time. Finally, towards the end of summer, it turns green. Everybody else in our neighborhood, everybody's got green grass, you know, lawns. But hers is always, it looks like straw. And I think that the company that came in, they're still doing it. They're still taking care of that lawn. And I think that instead of, maybe they should call it yellow instead of green. I don't know. But anyway, what's the matter with that, though? Well, what did they do? What the heck causes that lawn to look like a straw pile?
Yeah. Zoysia grass, maybe, huh?
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's one of the problems with being a turf grass extension specialist is when grass is dead, it all looks about the same. there could be so many different things. Like Larry said, it could actually be a different type of grass that stays brown at different parts of the year. Zoysia grass would be an example of that. Tall fescue doesn't green up really well until later in the season. There could be a creeping bent grass, or there could be some weeds that are causing it to be like that. It could also be soil issues. Maybe they have a shallower soil, and the roots aren't getting enough water. There's a lot of things that could lead to it. And I wouldn't. It may be something that the lawn care company is doing, but my guess is it has something to do with actually the plants that are on that lawn that are different from your neighbors.
I think I agree. Well, I'm sure I agree with you. There you go. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. Barry in Cross Plains, it's your turn. Hi, Barry.
Hi. Got a question. Red fungus, or rust fungus, they call it. I've had it 2 years ago. I got it on my lawn at the end of the season, just let it go. Last year, I finally found something at the end of the season to put it on, and it helped it. So this year, I'm wondering, how early do I start treating it?
Yeah, red thread is probably the red thread or pink snow mold are the two diseases that produce kind of a reddish, pinkish look. And they both happen in cool, wet conditions, so late fall, early spring. We don't recommend doing treatments for those things because they're so tied to the environment conditions. So if the environment is, if it's a little bit drier, of course last fall was super wet, but when things dry out, the fungus isn't that bad. And even when things are terrible, the fungus never really kills the grass. So the best for both of those diseases, proper nitrogen fertility is probably your best bet. You fertilize in the spring and in the fall, and that helps that red thread, the plant grow through the red thread. But in terms of applying the fungicides and things to attack the fungus, it's probably something you don't need to do every year.
Let's take another call. Jessica in Medford, your turn. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I just purchased my first home, and I have a mess of a yard right now. The previous owners didn't mow the grass very much last summer. There's missing patches of grass, especially under, I have a black walnut tree. And so I'm just looking for some general tips as a new homeowner.
Yeah, good. This is always a fun one because I think the solution, the path to a better looking lawn is closer than you think. So the main thing is just do your normal, regular, good maintenance practices. So mow it high, about 3 inches high with a sharp blade. And then for this first season, all I would recommend doing is fertilizing it 3 times. So Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day. And if they're not even mowing it, chances are they've been neglecting the fertility a bit. What you're going to see is that grass, the grass that you want to have is going to build and grow over the season. And to the point where you may not even need to do a recovery, an herbicide application or a renovation or anything like that. So just, for the first step, mow the grass, every week, sharp mower blade, nice and high, fertilize it three times a year, and then in September you can start thinking about, well, you know, here's the things that we need to work on for next year. But for year one, I would just do those basic things and see where you're at. And you're gonna, I'm gonna promise you, you're gonna see a big, big improvement just from those things alone.
Yeah, Jessica, does that help?
Awesome. Yeah, it does. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, can we apply, when should we apply crabgrass killer application, Randy? Doug, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right about now. So this weekend, next weekend is kind of right in the wheelhouse for keeping crabgrass at bay. But again, crabgrass is a grass that likes low nitrogen. So nitrogen fertility is going to help keep that out for next year, too.
Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison, our guest here on Garden Talk. He's a professor there and also with a PhD in horticulture, specializes in turf grass. So it's always great to have him with us for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and during our spring member drive, I hope you'll think about Garden Talk and all the shows that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. I know Garden Talk is a very popular show, and I hope you can support and show your support with a contribution today. So please do give at 888-202-2552. Or go online to WPR.org and make your contribution. And thank you very much. Appreciate it. And thanks to Doug Soldat for being with us here on Garden Talk, associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Lots of questions for him about lawns. And I think we'll just go right back to the phones. And Michael in Wauwatosa has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Larry and Doug. I have a comment and a couple questions. First, my comment is I'm very glad to hear you endorse clover in a lawn. I love that. I've overseeded my lawn with white Dutch clover, and I love to see that blooming, and I've got honeybees, so that's an added benefit to see them out there foraging. So glad to hear that. My questions are one on a very shade tolerant grass looking plant that I have some property in north central Wisconsin, and there's sugar maple stands, and below the sugar maple is this native grass looking plant that I was like, geez, I got to find out what that is, because it grows in the thickest of shade, and I researched it, and I believe it's Carex pennsylvanica or oak sedge.
Yeah.
And before I called you, I Googled that, and I got a bunch of pictures from the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens of it. And I wondered what you think about that in a lawn. And then my other question is, if you would, you had mentioned that you talked about soil health and the soil being a living organism. I wonder if you would talk about the proper application of herbicides on a lawn and how often and so forth. I'm personally against any herbicide application, but I know people are going to do it. And to me, these lawn care companies will talk you into, you know, every 3 weeks or something, even if there's not a single broadleaf weed out in your lawn, they're going to come and put some more herbicide down. And what does that do to the soil health, the worms out there that the robins might be feeding on and so forth? So I wonder if you could just talk to me about that. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Stuff there. So start with the sedge question. Sedges, there's many different types of sedges that do work in those dense, shady areas. And so I kind of throw those in the ground cover category, not necessarily a lawn, because if that sedge can survive in that deep shade, it's likely not growing very fast, and it doesn't tolerate tissue removal. So it's great for under those areas. But if you move it out into the full sun lawn that gets traffic and mowing, they will start to fade out. So again, right plant in the right place, and definitely in a deep shade like that, that particular oak sedge or Pennsylvania sedge is gonna be a good option, but not likely for a normal lawn. The stuff that we talked about with soil biology is really complicated. There's research that has looked at how herbicide applications affect the microorganisms in the soil. And in general, what they find is that there's not large impacts on those particular organisms. But like I said, we still have a lot to learn about these complex interactions. So I don't want to say across the board that there's no negative consequences, but I can't also point to findings that say these are causing soil health declines from these repeated applications. What I will say, though, is I love that you brought up, you know, some people will apply things even if it's not needed. There's no weeds in the lawn. And I do see that often. The best companies are going to be ones that'll scout and say, there's nothing here, we're going to skip that application. But it's the exception, maybe, rather than the rule. So you can do your own lawn care and make those right choices, but there's no reason for you to be putting out a grub control just because it's July, or, you know, putting down a weed and feed when you have two weeds in your whole lawn. So you got to think about what you're doing, and, you know, hopefully extension and garden talk and things like that help people make those right choices.
Yeah, good comments. Thank you, Doug. And Michael, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Ed in West Chicago has something for us. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon. Turf question. I have 3/4 of an acre. The front does great. It gets full sun. The back has some partial sun areas. And I have two questions about it. I've noticed some areas that have a grass that is lighter in color and shorter and almost looks like if you mowed it, it would be a green. And it seems to be spreading, particularly in the partial sun areas. And then I'm also doing some reseeding this year of some light areas with a shade-tolerant grass. And I'm wondering about using Quinsep for crabgrass control later in the season. I have a liquid sprayer.
Sure. The grass identification question is going to be tricky. It's a lighter green leaf. Is it a wide leaf blade?
It seems to be small.
It's a small leaf blade. Yeah, it's so difficult. I would say, take a picture of it. We have the Turfgrass Diagnostic Laboratory here at the University of Wisconsin. If you send in a picture, there's a chance we could identify it better for you than just by describing it. But yeah, too many options really to throw things out. Your second question about, help me out here. What was the second question, Larry?
Reseeding back there. And I can't use pre-emergent control crabgrass.
Yeah.
I have Quinsep.
Right. So there are, crabgrass is definitely a weed we like to control before it comes up. But if you can't do that because you're reseeding, Quinsep is an herbicide that has post-emergent properties. So yes, that is a good product, but you want to get it earlier than later. So when the crabgrass comes up, you want to start thinking about hitting that before it gets too big.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Ed, for calling. Appreciate it. Sam in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you for taking it. Doug, I was just kind of wondering what your thoughts are on robotic lawnmowers. I've been thinking about purchasing one, and I don't know if you have a preference for brand or if you know if they're worth the investment.
Yeah, that's fun. We actually did some research on them last year, and I'm actually meeting with a representative from a robotic mowing company this afternoon, so good question. I love them. I think they have a really good potential to change the way we do things. There are some caveats from working with them. They're not set it and forget it. They're out there mowing your lawn a little bit by bit, day by day, and they get stuck on things and they get lost. And so you got to be out there every day, kind of managing your robot. They do work on perimeter wires, so that it's not a GPS system. There's no models that are doing that yet. So you do have to install a wire around the perimeter of your lawn, and the less complicated the lawn, the better fit it's going to be for you. But yeah, in terms of the models, the only difference we would say is pick one that cuts with a razor blade. There's one model that uses like an aluminum flange that doesn't cut the lawn quite as nice as the ones that use a razor blade. But they do have a variety of features, and I would say the software, you know, look for one with good software. The ones that are easier to operate from your cell phone are going to be ones that you're going to enjoy more. But, you know, 5 years down the line, I think the technology is going to advance really rapidly, and you're going to see a lot of robotic mowers. So I'm excited about the technology.
How much do they cost? I haven't checked them out.
Yeah, there's a range. I think, you know, the cheapest one you're going to get is probably going to be in the, you know, $600-$700 range. But really to get they're expensive is the story. I would probably look to spend around $1,000. The Husqvarna, you know, I'm not going to endorse any one particular product, but Husqvarna has been doing this longer than most other companies, I think. And they have a lot of different models to choose from.
All right. There you go, Sam. Thank you so much. Russ in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Russ.
Yeah, hi. Great topic for this time of year. I have a question about the age-old nemesis of Creaking Charlie, and I know Larry has often mentioned in past programs about getting down there and pulling it out, but at 73, these old knees, that's not really an option. So I was thinking, can you take a spade shovel and shove it down maybe an inch or so and make yourself some shape of a rectangle or a square and then scrape it off much the same as you might do to remove good grass to plant a plant or a garden? You know, if you scraped it off an inch deep, would that be enough to get rid of it so you could replant grass seed?
Yeah, that's the general idea there. You got to remove all the plant parts and all the nodes, and you're going to miss some. And when you chop them up, you're going to have some that resprout and things like that. But that's definitely a good way to start over with Creeping Charlie is to scrape them away for a couple inches of the soil. Absolutely.
But I'm not going to guarantee that it won't come back in some fashion.
No, right. It'll come back, but, I mean, that's a good way to tackle it. And that sounds like a lot of work, too. So,
but good it'll work, it. Russ.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mike in Middleton, it's your turn.
Hi, thanks
Hi,
for
Mike.
Taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question for him. Does he do test plots with tall fescue?
Yeah, we love tall fescue. Sure. Yep. Tall fescue is a good low maintenance grass, which means it can, you know, maintain a nice, good, thick lawn without a lot of fertility. Definitely uses, it needs less irrigation than a lot of other grasses we have. The only caveat I have with it is it dies under ice cover. It can handle the cold, it can handle the snow, but if you get a low lying spot where ice accumulates, it's going to die. But we have a lot of tall fescue test plots, and we like that grass a lot.
Okay, because I have a dog issue. I aerate it every spring. I mow tall, so I don't have to worry about crabgrass. But the dog spots them in the compaction, and I've been trying. It used to grow in clumps, but they've got it, you know, better now, so it's more of an even grass surface. But do you have any type that's working better in this climate that you would recommend? I get it from Scott's, but it's hard to find. It's got a good dark green color to it. I can't remember the exact type it is. But do you have any types that you would recommend so I can look for it?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's actually dozens of different varieties, and we do evaluate all the different varieties. But sometimes the things that we evaluate don't always show up on the shelves, so it's hard to give you an exact recommendation. I will say one that I see a lot in the marketplace is Grande. So it's Grande 2, Grande 3, Grande 4. Those tend to do pretty good. Inferno is another good variety that's done well in our testing. But you can, if you want to look at the best performing grasses, you can go to the National Turf Grass Evaluation Program website, and you can select Wisconsin, and it'll show you all our rankings, and you can pick out the ones that you see on the shelf. But those varieties change, and they, you know, it's hard to, they're not very stable.
Yeah. And where's that? Where is it again? National
Turf Grass Evaluation Program.
Excellent. Yeah. I've been trying different varieties, and some do well, some don't do so well. And just trying to find something that's going to hang in there.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck, Mike. Thank you. Jeff in Partyville, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Good morning, Larry and Dr. Soldat. Yes, from Partyville. First of all, a big shout-out for Bruce and his predecessor, Tom, at OJ Noor. I've talked and worked with those guys in the past, and they're just awesome. Calling this morning. I had been listening to your show and would like maybe a little more advice as far as overseeding light clover into an existing grass lawn.
Sure. Like I said, we haven't ironed out what the right approaches are yet. We're still in the middle of that study. But I can tell you we did it a couple different ways. The first way we don't think is going to work is just buy the clover seed and spread it out on your existing lawn. We don't think that that's a good way to do it. What we hope will work is taking a dethatching rake or a machine that can slice grooves into the soil without killing the lawn, and then spreading the clover seed on top with the clover hoping to fall into those slits that you created, and then by just regular rainfall and irrigation, that clover will start to pop up. So we have seen that so far the initial results are going the way we expected, is that we get more clover take when we do it that way rather than just spreading. So that would be my advice. Cut some slits into your lawn, sprinkle the clover across it into those slits, and then let Mother Nature do the rest.
All right,
okay.
Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Amy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This question is about Creeping Charlie again, but it's a little different. Under trees, we know that the trees compete for water and nutrients, and turf grass is one of the worst things to have under your trees. Hence, we do all the clipping, and et cetera. But Creeping Charlie under trees would provide flowers for the pollinators and would provide a good ground cover. Tell me, is that a big competitor for water as much as grass turf is?
Mm. Boy, that's good. I haven't seen data on that before. And usually when I think about it the other way, when I just think, the trees are stealing all the water from the grass, and you're asking the other way. I would guess that, no, that Creeping Charlie would be perfectly safe to have around the base of those trees. And like you said, it does make sense there. I don't have the data. Laura Joel in horticulture here would be a person that might be able to tell you more. But I think you don't have anything to worry about with Creeping Charlie growing at the base of trees in terms of competition.
No, I don't think so either. Thank you for calling, Amy. Sherry in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. Last year, I dug up a big area in the back that had been a garden area and tried planting grass seed, but wasn't too successful. I did put down several bags of topsoil and peat moss and seed starter. Now, for the winter, I covered it with black plastic because I didn't want the weeds to come up this spring. And so now, should I wait till fall to plant back there, or should I try grass again? Or should I take that plastic off and try now?
Yes. You know, you could do all those things. How big is the area? Is it big enough?
About 9 by 9. Biggish.
Okay.
You know, if I were you, I would sod that thing.
Yeah, I would too.
it's a small enough area where it won't be too expensive, and you get instant cover. I can tell you, I you know, I'm a turf grass scientist. I plant grass every year, and almost every year something I plant fails because of Mother Nature. I mean, planting seeds and growing grass isn't always as easy as it seems. The weather can play a lot of roles. The site can. So if I have an opportunity to sod something, that's where I'd go. You could leave the plastic on all summer long. That's going to kill any weeds that would be in there. Pull back the black plastic in August, and then you can seed grass seed into that in August with very little risk of weeds coming up. So that could be an option. And again, you can try seeding it again this spring, but just know that failure is not uncommon when it comes to growing in new bare areas. It's tough.
Oh, man, it is tough indeed. Thank you so much for calling, Sherry. Appreciate your call. And, Doug, it's always a pleasure. You come back and be with us again, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to sit across from you and get to look at you again, Larry.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. It's strange times we're in, but it's always great to have you come by, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Larry.
Doug Soldat is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, PhD in horticulture, specializing in turf grass. You turn to WPR every day knowing you can find connection and companionship when you need them, and great information like we got today from Doug Soldat. And we're in our spring member drive, and we wanted to offer a thank you gift that could be a source of comfort and delight. I've seen them. They're really cute. We brought back our listener favorite, one of our favorites anyway, our WPR socks. So you can get a pair of WPR socks when you give $10 a month or more. Those socks are, I'd like to think of them as a warm reminder of the connection that we share and your support for the programs you enjoy. So you can give at 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. Or just go online, make your contribution at WPR.org. WPR.org. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll talk about how to create an edible garden in any space. That's Friday at 11 and Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. And, of course, online at any time. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR and Garden Talk. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.